One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Chapter 49, Book 132 of the Barber Family Saga. Today, the head of the House of Murray. Miss Penelope Lacey, Henry Barber's granddaughter, leaves her 1959 Boulevardier Parisienne at curb at 264 Seacliff Drive and goes briskly up the steps to find the front door on the latch and her grandfather talking on the phone in the library. She pauses in the doorway, looking very chic in the winter ensemble from her own smart shop on Telegraph Hill.
No, Joan. If Ross is there, I won't come over now. Hold on. Somebody's come in.
Hi, Grandfather. Is Uncle Paul upstairs?
One moment, Penelope. Joan? Yes, it was Penelope. All right, I'll tell her. Penelope, your sister says drop in if you have time. Mm. Yes. What do you call that outfit?
It's the sheath suit with fingertip jacket.
Oh, about the time I get accustomed to styles, you people change them. How is your shop doing?
Oh, we'll have to hire two extra clerks over Christmas, I suspect. Grandfather, I said, is Uncle Paul home?
Not yet. Expected for dinner.
All right, Mother, I'll warn him.
Your Aunt Hazel coming down the stairs.
Father, Mother says if you go over to Jones to be sure to...
Penelope. Hello there.
Evening, Aunt Hazel.
You started to say if I go to Jones...
Mother says don't stay too long because we're having an early dinner. Dan and I are going to the theater tonight on passes.
I'll not go to Jones. Ross is there. This is the day he takes Johnny and Tina. I forgot about it.
I hear Ross is at Jones nearly every afternoon, tutoring Johnny in French.
Yeah, showing great interest in the children now that Joan is planning to marry again.
Oh, I thought that was supposed to be a secret.
Hasn't been in the papers, that's all.
Unofficial until after her divorce.
I think I'll drop in over there while I'm waiting. I haven't seen Joan for ages. Will you call me when Uncle Paul gets home?
Yes. Don't forget your furs.
Oh, thanks.
That's a perfectly charming suit. Lacey fashions, of course.
My own design, thank you.
She tells me the shop is doing so well, she's adding two sales girls for the Christmas season.
Really? Have you hired them yet?
No, but we'll be interviewing next week. Anybody in mind?
I suppose you'd want young women.
Not especially. We try to keep a drawing room atmosphere. I'm more interested in background and éclat.
Would she have to have a social security number?
Who do you have in mind?
Myself.
Why, Aunt Hazel?
There's hardly a woman I know who hasn't had some sort of business experience. Why, even Claudia has a social security number.
Is that the reason you'd like the job?
No. There are certain Christmas presents I'd prefer to earn myself. That is, if I could be truly useful to somebody who'd pay me a salary.
If you're not joking, drop in Monday.
I may do that, Penelope.
Wish you would. Well, call me at Jones, will you, Grandfather, when Uncle Paul comes?
Yes. There are certain Christmas presents you'd like to buy? What do you imply?
Dan and I have decided to start in January and pay something on our note every single month. So our Christmas won't be very lavish, I'm afraid.
You're dodging my question. Daniel is doing very well at the factory.
I'm glad.
And you're needed here, Hazel. Well, you wouldn't earn enough in the shop to pay car fare and lunches.
I'm not sure I'd be very useful in Penny's shop, but I would like a job, Father. And there are jobs, aren't there, in the Christmas season?
Yes. There's something you're holding back.
I've belatedly developed extrasensory perceptions. Sometimes I even think I'm a mind reader.
Yes.
There are some people to whom Dan and I owe money who are critical of every move we make.
You are being super sensitive.
Hi there, Father Barber. Where's my girlfriend?
Yeah, Daniel. Here she is. Here's Hazel.
Hello, Dan.
Hiya, my lovely. Corsage and everything.
Dan, shame on you. Don't anybody tell Betty. Well, I'll go and start dressing. See you upstairs, Dan. Excuse me, Father.
Yeah.
Well, sir, Father Barber, a fella came to me with a great proposition today. He has a surplus machine for making plastic hula hoops, and he'll sell it for... Hmm?
Go on.
Is Hazel upset about something?
I know this much. She's thinking of finding a paying job for the Christmas season.
What?
Yes, considered working for Penelope.
What is this, a joke?
Hurt feelings, Daniel. It's Betty, I suspect. It is. Been in the air for several days.
Yeah.
Yes, I never learn the details until it's all over. But something is going on.
Excuse me, sir. I'll go have a talk with her while I'm getting dressed.
You started to tell me about a proposition. A what machine? Hula hoop?
Well, it's kind of complicated. I'll go into it later. It's a machine, you see, for making hula hoops. A terrific bargain.
You didn't commit us to any action, Daniel.
Oh, no, sir. I always tell him I have to talk things over with my silent partner.
Good. That may save us considerable money. Well, run along, Daniel.
Yeah, betcha.
Perhaps we can have a few moments alone before dinner.
Yeah, I'll arrange it that way.
Good. Here, yes. Hula hoops. Last season's fad. Well, always one step behind. Hula hoops indeed.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
This is Bill Goodwin. You know, someone once said, humor is the true democracy. That's why we Americans can smile when we tell the stories of the legendary heroes who helped to build our country's great institutions and industries. Like the railroad men of the Mississippi, whose hero was a rattlesnake named Leander. Now, sir, it seems that a telegrapher was sent to a lonely jerkwater stop called Way, Mississippi, as a night operator. And one night, a rattlesnake slithered through the door and stopped to look up with sad, shiny black eyes at the operator. Figuring the snake was hungry, the operator put a plate of milk on the floor. Well, the grateful snake lapped it up in no time, and after that, the two of them became great friends. Every night, Leander, that's what the operator christened the snake, would curl up on the desk and watch the telegraph key sending out messages. One night, Leander repeated a message by clicking off the dots and dashes with the rattles on his tail, and it wasn't long before the operator had taught him the whole Morse code. After that, the two friends held conversations every night, and Leander learned how to report the arrival of oncoming trains. You see, he'd crawl up on the table, stick his head through the window, and poke out his tongue like a radio antenna. That's how he got the vibrations of approaching trains. Sometimes he could pick one up that was 35 miles away. When the time finally came for the operator to change stations, he asked Leander to go with him. But Leander sadly shook his head and told the operator that this was his home. And as he slowly slithered through the door, he turned for one last look at his friend and tapped out 73, which to a telegrapher means goodbye. Yes, it is a democracy which lets us tell such legendary stories with a twinkle in our eyes and a chuckle in our throats. And so long as we continue to laugh together as a people, ladies and gentlemen, we will live together as a nation.
10 minutes later, in the apartment on the second floor, Dan puts away his electric razor and comes back into the bedroom where Hazel, sitting at the triple mirror, has just decided not to wear pearl earrings after all. Their eyes meet in the mirror.
I'm sorry I spoke so sharply, Dan.
Oh, that's okay, Hazel. It's just that it's kind of a reflection on me if you take a job right now, after your father has set us up with a factory and all.
I dearly love to earn enough to buy the presents for Betty and Jack and the 6 girls. And what's more, I'd like Betty to know I'd earned the money. Dan, did you ever hear what Betty's mother used to say about borrowing money from relatives?
No. Worth repeating?
Never borrow from a relative. If you want to stop speaking to somebody, stop speaking to a bank.
She didn't say that to you.
She said it to Pinky, knowing he'd repeat it.
Aren't you kind of building this up?
No, Dan, really. She's been actually snippy to me since we sold the store. She talks about what their college expenses are going to be. We are going to pay something on the note in January, aren't we?
Well, I don't know.
Actually, if I did work for Penny over the holidays, I'd get a Social Security number, which I'd like to have. And I could buy the Christmas presents with my own earnings at a discount. I should think then Betty'd be a little ashamed.
Is that the right kind of motive for giving Christmas presents? To shame somebody?
Hmm?
We give presents to people because we love them, don't we? I don't think it's right to turn Christmas into a kind of subtle rebuke.
Oh, Dan. You're absolutely right.
Well, now you stop worrying about Betty and what we owe and all that stuff. And let's have a real Christmas around here. Great things to celebrate this year. Great plans ahead.
Oh, Dan, I do love you.
More of the Barbers in just a moment.
Do you know who said,
The time to guard against corruption and tyranny is before they have gotten hold of us. It is better to keep the wolf out of the fold than to trust to pulling his teeth and claws after he has entered. Those words of warning came from the pen of Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson was warning his fellow Americans to guard against tyranny and corruption before these influences have the opportunity to gain a foothold in the United States. He knew that it would be easier to keep tyranny and corruption outside the borders of the United States than it would be to get rid of these evils once they had entered the country. Jefferson's sentiments are followed today as we continue to guard against tyranny and corruption. It is in the American tradition. Remember the words of Thomas Jefferson. They are part of your American heritage. The time to guard against tyranny and corruption is now.
Coming downstairs to the library, Dan finds his father-in-law busy on the phone at his ancient roll-top desk.
Got a minute, Father Barber?
Yes. I've been thinking about the proposition, the machine for making hula hoops. Now, my boy, in my opinion, it would be a major mistake to make hula hoops. That was last season's phenomenon.
Oh, I agree with you, sir. Oh, sure. Now, my point is, I figured a way to use the same machine and the plastic. Only make snorkels out of the hoops, do you see? I figured it all out. I want to branch from skis and snowshoes into the swimming season. Spread the risk and keep the people working all year round.
Yes, excellent idea, Daniel. I agree in principle.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, Uncle Dan.
Oh, hi there, Penelope. How's the girl?
Excuse me, I have a date with Uncle Paul.
Oh, Penelope?
Yes?
Your Aunt Hazel has decided not to take a Christmas job anywhere. She'll be busy around here.
Oh, too bad. Could have used her. If she changes her mind, or you do, let me know. See you later.
Yes, that's what I'd like to see, Daniel. The head of his house making the decisions. Yes. Now show me the figures on the hula hoop machine and explain to me what a snorkel is. Sounds like a very enterprising idea.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 50, Book 132... Betty puts a finger in the dike. Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.